Morning. Thanks for coming out and attending this talk on the HPV vaccine. Today I'll be speaking with you about effects of an intervention that we conducted with an urban safety net healthcare system. In terms of disclosures, I have no financial relationships to disclose. The intervention trial that I'll be presenting today was funded by the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas. First, some context. In where I am in Dallas, Texas, there's an excess cervical cancer burden relative to the United States and to Texas. There's suboptimal HPV vaccine coverage in 2009. In 2009, according to the NIST, the one-dose coverage rate was 47%, and the three-dose coverage rate was 21%. There are both socioeconomic and healthcare access factors that really cause it to be suboptimal in Dallas. Among 13 to 17-year-olds, 40% live below the poverty threshold. 15% are uninsured, which means they don't have private insurance, and they are not eligible for any public insurance products such as Medicaid and CHIP. 67% did not have an 11 to 12-year-old visit with a healthcare provider. And Parkland, where I conduct my research, Parkland Health and Hospital System, is the Dallas County safety net system. It's a vertically integrated healthcare system consisting of 10 neighborhood pediatric clinics, specialty clinics, and then a tertiary care hospital. And I did a retrospective chart review between 2007 and 2009, and what we found was that we had even lower HPV vaccine rates, 30% one-dose coverage rates and 6% three-dose coverage rates, and only 40% had documentation of a provider recommendation. So a lot of need in a population, in a system that could do a lot of impact. As a result of that retrospective chart review, the pediatric medical director and I implemented some provider-directed strategies. We implemented standing orders as recommended by the community guide, the CDC's community guide. We also implemented reminder systems through the electronic medical record system to prompt physicians to offer it at every single visit. At the same time we were doing that retrospective part review, we did a survey with mothers to look at their decision-making process. And what we found was that 18% of them had already had the first dose for their daughters. 13% had decided yes but had not acted on that decision. Only 9% had decided against it. So that's here, this box right here. What was interesting to really focus on was that 60% either had never heard of the HPV vaccine, had never thought about it for their daughter, or were undecided about the vaccine. 60% reported needing more information before making a decision, and they felt really frustrated about this whole process. Because our population is very low literacy and poor, they couldn't read and process the information that was handed to them in a clinic provider visit quick enough to make a decision. They felt their discussion with their doctor was rushed, and they really wanted to take something home that they could look at and review with their spouse. So we applied for funds through the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute, and we chose two parent-targeted strategies to increase parent demand. Those strategies were informed by the community guide, and one of them was a mailed HPV vaccine brochure, mailed 1 to 2 weeks prior to their upcoming clinic appointment, and we also examined telephone recalls to increase dose 2 and dose 3 coverage. And we developed these materials in both English and Spanish. So here's just a brief overview of the design. What we did was we used the electronic medical record and we harnessed it to understand and identify Parkland female patients 11 to 18 years old with upcoming appointments who had not started the HPV vaccine series. We then randomized them to either receive an active comparison, which was an invitation letter plus an adolescent general vaccine brochure that described the four vaccines that are recommended to adolescents. And the second one was an invitation letter plus an HPV vaccine brochure. Parents were invited to complete a survey before the clinic visit and do informed consent for the second parts of the study, and this pre-visit survey was optional. Then we reviewed, they had their visits, and then we reviewed EPIC, the electronic medical record, to see if they started the HPV vaccine series. If they did not, and they declined the vaccine at that visit, we conducted a recall survey 2 weeks after that visit and asked them if they wanted to, if they had thought about it some more and whether they wanted to change their mind and schedule an immunization-only appointment. If they had initiated the vaccine at that point, we monitored them through the electronic medical record, and if they missed their dose two, we delivered a telephone recall after 3 months, and we also monitored them again after 4 months after the dose two, when they should have received dose two, and if they missed their dose three, they received another phone recall. And again, we used the EMR to monitor coverage. We did extensive formative research to look at what information mothers and fathers really wanted to hear about the HPV vaccine and why, at what information they wanted. A lot of them wanted to know how HPV led to cervical cancer, why vaccinate young girls. Many mothers were confused about the disease and whether the vaccine prevents, cures, or treats HPV. And so we sent intervention messages that likened it to other vaccines, for example, measles, that it's most effective if it's given before they're exposed to disease. And that's really why it's recommended to preteens, because they're not likely to have had sex, are seeing their doctor for well child visits and getting other vaccines at this age, and have more access to government programs, as Noel mentioned, the Vaccine for Children's program that gives shots for free. They really wanted to know if there was enough testing on the vaccine. They thought it was too new. They thought that they didn't know that there had been clinical trials done on humans and young girls. And so we sent intervention messages about it being safe and effective, of that there were over 32 million girls have gotten it, and that it was tested for 5 years and before being approved in the U.S. They were also concerned about long-term side effects. They were specifically concerned about fertility, or they were concerned that it might cause cancer down the road. And so we addressed that very directly, talking about how it doesn't cause cancer, that there are no fertility problems reported among women who were enrolled in the trial, and that there are less side effects reported for the HPV vaccine than for other vaccines, and it's actually less than 1%. It's actually less than 0.000. It's like 5 zeros and then a 1%. But for our low literacy population, that number means nothing to them. And so numerous issues mean that we just say less than 1%. As Noel mentioned, we really wanted to focus on the concept of anticipated regret, because a lot of the mothers said, well, do I have to make this decision now? Why can't I make this decision later? Why would it be harmful for them to delay making a decision? And so we sent messages about that through narrative kind of stories. We had a woman, a really eloquent grandmother, who was now caring for the children of her daughter, who had died of cervical cancer at age 29. And so she really wanted to emphasize that the HPV shot is available, and it's easy to do, and that little pain of the shot is nothing in comparison to suffering from cancer down the line. And so she was our poster message for that. In terms of process outcomes, we reviewed and conducted this study between February of 2011 and December. There were over 2,000 female children who had appointments during that time period. About 42% had already started the series. Among them, the dose distribution was about half of them had completed the series. 30% had only received one dose, two doses, and 20% had only received one dose. We randomized 875. Very few opted out or were not interested in the study, and these numbers here below report the number who were eligible, for the analyses that we conducted. And it was an intent to treat analysis. Here are the participant characteristics by intervention group. What you see here is that about 50% of our sample were between the ages of 11 to 12 years old. About 70% were Hispanic. 60% of those spoke Spanish as their primary language and conducted both the survey and received materials in Spanish. About three quarters, or 74%, were on public insurance, Medicaid, or CHIP, and we were in 4 of the 10 clinics, and about half, most of them came from 2 of the clinics. In terms of results, one-dose coverage, and this is one-dose coverage within 14 days of that clinic visit that we recruited them for. And what we saw was no difference between the two groups. The uptake rate in the active comparison group was 40.6%, and in the intervention group, it was 42%. When we looked in a multivariate logistic regression, what we saw in terms of other predictors was that African Americans were less likely than Hispanics to initiate the vaccine at that visit. Publicly insured Medicaid CHIP patients were more likely to get the vaccine than people with no insurance, children with no insurance. People who had documentation of refusing the HPV vaccine in the past were less likely to initiate the vaccine. Those who had a flu vaccine in the past year were more likely. There was no association between receipt of meningococcal vaccine, probably because half of our sample was 11 to 12, and that was the first time that they had been offered the vaccine. And in terms of, it was co-occurring, so there was nothing in their past. And then there was no effect of completing the survey. Again, only a subset of our respondents and participants in the AIM-1 analyses had completed the survey. In terms of AIM-2, which is whether the two-week telephone recall got parents to change their mind and agree to schedule an immunization-only appointment, we had 88 in the active comparison group decline at the visit and 73 in the intervention group, and those were the numbers that we had for our analysis. The difference between the percentage of those who then decided to get it within 12 months was 6.8% converted and 8.7% in the intervention group. There was no significant difference between groups, and telephone recalls also was not effective. So two ways in which I was crushed. AIM-3 results. Okay, so we looked at three-dose coverage after 12 months of within randomization. And what this pie chart shows you is the dose distribution in the two groups. So here is the active comparison group, and here is the intervention group. The lighter colors means that they haven't had less doses, and the dark purple is that they had three doses. And what you see is about 44.5%, even though they had a clinic opportunity to receive the dose, had not started the vaccine series in the active comparison group. The percentage was 36% in the intervention group. There was 15.6% had completed all three doses in the active comparison group, and that contrasted with 28.7% in the intervention group. So a 13.1% difference, and that is significant. To compare, during that same time period in the National Immunization Survey TEEN 2011 Dallas County, the three-dose coverage rates was 23.4%. So we had slightly higher in our intervention group than in the total population of Dallas County. In terms of the trial, the take-home messages were that telephone recalls are effective at prompting parents to finish the series and increase the three-dose coverage rates. There were significant numbers of parents, as I mentioned, who, when presented with clinic opportunities to get the vaccine, were resistant or remained undecided. And we really wanted to figure out and are really asking ourselves, how can we address parental indecision and lack of motivation to immunize their adolescent female? Just to speak to that issue and give some more late information of what we've been doing currently, is we just received funding from the National Cancer Institute to develop a self-persuasion intervention. Self-persuasion is a psychological strategy to try and direct individuals to generate their own arguments for a health behavior. It's kind of like generating pro-con lists, which is something very common among, I think, well-educated populations, but is not something that low literacy and uninsured populations are really counseled to do in their interactions with the healthcare system. And so it's been shown to be an effective strategy for well-educated populations where they're asked to write down their arguments. But I'm really interested in whether that same strategy can be used with safety net populations who are low literacy. And can you achieve the same intervention effect with tablet applications where parents verbalize their arguments and their arguments are recorded? And further, we're really interested in whether that, if you time that decision-making process and thought process right before a clinic visit, does it have an impact on parent-provider discussions, because that's really a big block, black box in our analysis of HPV vaccine. We don't really know what's being discussed between providers and patients, how it's being discussed, and we're wondering whether this intervention can help them be a more active participant during the discussion, and whether it helps them explain the reasons for being undecided so that providers can provide a more specific response based on the questions that they have. And so before I end, I just wanted to acknowledge all of my collaborators on this study, and my funders for the various, formative research that we've done, as well as for the trial, and then see if I have some time for questions.
Great. We have about 5 minutes for questions.
I'm not sure if you included this, but I'm curious if you were able to see if there was an association between these rates of HPV vaccination and absence only programs. I know particularly in Texas that maybe...
Right. So abstinence-only programs are delivered in the schools, and so we were not in a school-based health center. There's a lot of reasons why Texas is unique in terms of doing HPV vaccine promotion. There was a lot of backlash in 2007 with our governor trying to pass an executive order to mandate the HPV vaccine and bypass the legislature in that decision process. And so that was made people very resistant to the idea of mandates. There's a lot of upheaval in the way in which care is delivered in terms of what things you can agree to in pediatric clinics. For example, you can visit a physician in Texas and get contraceptive care as an adolescent, but you can't consent to a vaccine. Which is kind of counterintuitive for preventive vaccines. And so it doesn't totally answer your question. We don't really know about abstinence only, but there's a lot of reasons why it's more difficult to deliver the HPV vaccine. And there's a lot of interest, not just for HPV vaccine, but across all adolescent vaccines, to enable adolescents to consent on their own for vaccines if the parent has given a release for care to a pediatric clinic. And so that's one way that we could make it easier, because it's very difficult to chase down a parent, because adolescents attend visits without their parent, but they can't receive vaccines during that non-parent attended visit.
Another question.
Were your
None of them. So they weren't randomized unless they started. So that's actually a really interesting aspect of recall interventions that are being evaluated and published in the past 2 years. Some of them only enroll people who had already started the series, and so you don't know whether your intervention is also having an effect on initiation. So none of them had started the vaccine series before being randomized.
Were you able to do anything? Subgroup analysis, given the end, that you had to figure out if there were some groups that it might actually have helped. But you had some null results early on.
Right.
You don't have that many people. Still, 500 is not such a small number.
I know. We tried some, and we haven't really seen any differences by those groups. I mean, there is that one thing with the multivariate analysis where you see that more Hispanics are agreeing to get the vaccine than African-Americans, so lower uptake among African-Americans. I don't know if that's related to trust in the medical system and trust of new technologies. But that's all we've done so far.
Thank you.